me back in Manitoba many moons ago. Sunday morning. Quality time with Gordon Goldsborough on Abandoned Manitoba. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
What are we talking about today?
Well, you know, it's not often that our conversations here on Abandoned Manitoba verge into current events. But there is an apartment block on Portage Avenue here in Winnipeg called the Birchwood Terrace that has been abandoned for the past 2 months. Its 171 suites were evacuated abruptly on news that the building was unsafe. Now, we've not heard about the cause of the problem, and so I thought to understand what may be happening, we should talk about Frank Lount. He's the contractor who built the Birchwood Terrace back in 1962.
And who was Frank Lount?
Well, he was born in Ontario in 1890, and he came to Winnipeg in 1921. He appears to have specialized in residential construction, either single-family homes or apartment blocks, although perhaps his most noteworthy project was the Winnipeg Clinic building on St. Mary Avenue. He built it in 1942. After the Second World War, Lount bought a large swath of land in St. James that we know today as Silver Heights. And over the course of several decades, he built many of the homes in that area. But he did work in other parts of the city too. So, for example, in late 1951, he began to build a 24-suite, three-story apartment block on Roslyn Road, overlooking the Assiniboine River. He named it the Saigon Apartments, the first of its kind in Canada, and the second in all of North America, because of the unique way in which Frank Lount built it. He used a method called lift slab.
Tell us more about that method. What does it mean, lift slab?
Well, it was a method of building multi-story concrete structures, such as offices, parkades, apartment blocks. It had been developed in the early 1950s, we're not sure exactly, 50 or 51, by two Americans, architect Philip Utes and inventor Thomas Slick. In what is known officially today as the Utes-Slick lift slab method of construction. The basic premise is that several concrete slabs are made, one on top of another, something like a stack of pancakes. Then they're raised to make the floors and the roof of a building.
And how does lift slab work?
Well, let's say you're going to build a three-story lift slab building. Workers construct a form on the ground, and a concrete slab reinforced with steel is poured. After the concrete sets, a special material is applied to the top of the new slab to prevent wet concrete poured on top of it from sticking. The process is repeated until there are four slabs in the stack: the main floor, slabs for the second and third floors, and a fourth slab for the roof. Numerous holes are left in the horizontal slabs to allow vertical steel columns to pass through them. Then, hydraulic jacks are installed at the top of the columns with steel rods that extend down to the slabs below. A machine synchronizes the lifting of all the jacks so they pull up the slabs evenly. Otherwise, the slabs would crack. When a slab reaches its final height, wedges, or some other mechanism, are inserted between the slab and the column. In effect, the wedges prevent the slab from dropping. When the final roof slab is secured at the top of the column, the skeletal structure is complete. Exterior and interior walls can now be added, and voila, you have a building.
So why did contractors use the lift slab method?
Well, it had numerous advantages over other methods for building multi-story structures, but it came down to cost. It was more economical than other methods because it minimized the need for workers, equipment, and supplies. Well, in fact, in 1952, the year after he built that Saigon Apartments, Frank Lount published a paper about the method in an architectural journal. There, he observed there were at least three additional advantages for cold climates, such as ours. First, the speed of the process meant it was better suited to a short building season. Second, if working under cold conditions, all the slabs could be constructed inside a single enclosed space that was easier and cheaper to heat. And third, the method requires fewer workers, which is an advantage when you're building in areas where skilled labor is in short supply.
Are there any problems with the method?
Well, there can be. Some of the structures built using the lift slab method have fallen catastrophically when the mechanism holding up one or more of the slabs has failed. There was a parkade in Wolverhampton, England, whose top floor fell onto the level below. Fortunately, the disaster occurred at night, so nobody was inside at the time. And other lift slab buildings have been found to be severely compromised too. A recent example was a 7-story apartment block in Calgary. The situation there sounds eerily like the one here in Winnipeg 2 months ago. In 2017, residents of the Calgary block were given 15 minutes notice to evacuate. City officials were vague in their explanations for the evacuation, but they said that the block was constructed with a unique method and that, and this is a direct quote, it's a structural issue and at the forefront of it are the floor flats. Well, that sounds to me like a failing lift slab structure.
So is the lift slab method kind of fundamentally unsound?
Well, in 1987, a lift slab building under construction at Bridgeport, Connecticut, collapsed, killing 28 workers. Subsequently, an international task force of structural engineers reviewed the case, and they concluded that the method is sound, so long as it's done under the careful scrutiny of engineers. The task force published a lengthy report, and it referred specifically to an aspect of the method called, quote, the Canadian wedge connection. It was called that because of the way the slabs were secured to the columns. It had been developed by an unidentified Canadian company. This method was abandoned, this Canadian wedge connection, by the lift slab industry in the early 1960s because, according to the task force, it was prone to failure. The implication is that lift slab structures constructed using the Canadian wedge connection in the 1950s and early 1960s may be unsafe.
So what should we conclude from this situation?
Well, here is where I must be very clear. The Saigon Apartments, the first lift slab building in Canada, was demolished last April, and it's unknown if structural deterioration contributed to the decision to tear it down. We have not been told by the owners of the Birchwood Terrace on Portage Avenue, which does have structural issues, if it can be made safe. But that apartment block in Calgary was ultimately determined to be impossible to fix. So it was demolished in 2020.
Are there any other lift slab buildings in Winnipeg?
Yes, absolutely. Frank Lount was an advocate for lift slab technology, so it's reasonable to assume that all his multi-story concrete buildings from 1951 onward were made with lift slab. I tried to make a list of them using archives and historical newspapers, and I did find several, including a couple of senior citizens' residences and a couple of buildings at the Health Sciences Center. However, I am not going to say, without knowledge of their present conditions, that they are in any danger of collapse. In my view, that would be irresponsible. Instead, I urge all owners and managers of lift slab structures in Winnipeg, you know who you are, to ensure your buildings are inspected regularly by qualified engineers. You know, but perhaps my urging is unnecessary. For all I know, because of the Birchwood Terrace incident, engineers are already quietly spreading out across Winnipeg, inspecting lift slab buildings and parkades to make sure they are safe. I'd like to think that Frank Lount, who passed away, by the way, in 1976, would rest easier knowing that his legacy in providing homes for thousands of Winnipeggers is safe too.
Worth looking into. Thank you, Gordon.
You're welcome.
What will we be talking about next week?
Well, a year ago, a group of antique car enthusiasts accompanied me on a 3-day journey dubbed the Pine to Prairie Relic Run along the original route of the Trans-Canada Highway here in Manitoba. Well, 2 weeks from now, another group will set out on a similar trip along the former Sunshine Highway, and we'll talk about that trip next week.
Sounds fun. Thanks, Gordon.
See you then. Bye-bye for now. No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons.